Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Yeah, bonus podcast time. This is a recording of the live show I streamed last Saturday, or if you're listening to this at some other week in history, last Saturday, but more last Saturday. I don't know how time works. Anyway, I recorded it then on February the 6th as part of the virtual Leicester Comedy Festival with help from the very lovely lot at Next Up Comedy and Jericho Comedy, who put it all together. Because it was sort of virtually in Leicester, they asked me to get local guests. So as you'll hear, this is very confusing, isn't it? Time. How does Doctor Who do it? I don't know. It's confusing. I spoke to local campaigner Tim Morton and Abby Harrison, who set up a food bank from her dining room in the midst of the pandemic. Both of them were absolutely fascinating, talking about social housing, poverty issues and the pandemic and all sorts of things, and how Leicester was affected by those too. And they also did very brilliantly, considering a live stream with an audience is a little bit different to me just interviewing them over Zoom one-to-one. So the proceeds of this show are going to go to the food bank that Abby works at, Woodgate Community. And if you fancy donating some too after you've listened to this, then details are at the end of this show and in the podcast blurb. Alternatively, just bung some cash to your local one instead. Some things before you listen in. The sound isn't as amazing as my usual incredible sound episodes. because it's all noise taken from the Zoom video recording, which just isn't as good, is it? It still sounds pretty good, though, because I am an expert. I'm not. It sounds fine. You can't hear the audience laughing, as they were all on mute and probably not laughing. No, I promise I could see them laughing. Or maybe they were convulsing. Look, hey, it's a response. It counts. Also, some bits are visual. You can't see those. Tough, but on the plus side, you don't have to see Andrew Bridgeton's face, so win. And many of the jokes in the intro you will have already heard in this week's proper episode with Emily Kenway. But look, I know some of you might like to hear how they evolved or didn't evolve, or how I didn't scrap them, even though I should have done and should have learnt better. So I've left the episode as it is, really, and you can just skip through it. You know how buttons work. I'm also going to pop the full video of the show on the Patreon and Ko-fi when I get a chance and understand how to do it. Right, without any ado whatsoever, here is the Partly Political broadcast live at the Leicester Comedy Festival on February the 6th, 2021.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome your host, Ciarán Duieb.
Hey! Welcome to the Partly Political broadcast live! As opposed to the usual audio show, which I guess is dead, or at least behind the eyes anyway. Right, we're going to try and do this live. Let's see. I've put some things into place that probably won't work. Let's see if we can do this. Oh, yeah. Let's go. And... Partly Political broadcast! Partly Political broadcast, yeah! So, for those of you who don't watch the podcast, I'm going to try and do it just like... don't watch the podcast, no one does, it's audio. I'm going to try and do it like it's the podcast, at which point I'm going to realise how grateful I am that when I record it every week, I can delete bits. And I've also had a really big cup of tea before I started, so I'm going to need to wee halfway through. Okay, welcome people! This is the comedy politics show whose audience, like the R rate, is showing clear signs of falling as people do what they can to avoid it. Oh, wait, hang on. Go, hang on, go. No, not that one. There we go. Yeah, this is why I'm not on radio. Yeah, and go. There you go, backdrop. I'm still Tiernan Duyeb despite all of my efforts, and isn't it just lovely that as the one-year anniversary of COVID getting it on with Britain coincides with Valentine's Day, the government is surprising it with a romantic 10-day hotel quarantine trip. Though I'm sure, as he does with all his relationships, the Prime Minister and what if someone made a snowman out of blowtorch gel ignite and stuck children's fancy dress on it, Boris Johnson, is going to leave booking the room till the very last minute, at which point there'll only be a shitty service station place off the M1 available, and then he'll make sure anyone but him foots the bill. So, guys, these quarantine hotels, yeah? 10 days of being stuck in your room, all food brought to you, you're unable to go outside except for a fag break. Where can you book for one of these? Because I'm asking for me and tired parents everywhere, for which this sounds like a dream vacation in 2021. Sadly, of course, the only stay will be mandatory from February. The stay will only be mandatory from February the 15th for anyone stupid enough to travel to the UK from a country on the travel ban list. And why would anyone do that? Have you not seen or read anything ever about the UK right now? The only reason it makes sense to come here is if you're part of Doctors Without Borders or you need inspiration for your remake of The Omega Man. It is, though, the hotel quarantine thing. I hate to say it, a fairly sensible idea from the government, except that it's almost exactly a year too late. But hey, I guess the chase is the fun part, isn't it? It just wouldn't have been as good if we didn't give COVID a head start first. You know, got to give it a chance. And of course, the government are all about unleashing potential or something like that. James Cleverly, a man who has the constant expression of a dog that's just stepped on a rake, and is somehow the Minister of State for the Middle East and North Africa, which is the most obvious way to announce that you honestly couldn't give a fuck about what happens to that area. I mean, James Cleverly could probably barely tell you where the Middle East or North Africa are, let alone how they're getting on. But anyway, I always think, actually, that James Cleverly, MP for Braintree, sounds like a sarcastic insult that you'd give an idiot at school. Oh, look at James Cleverly, MP for Braintree. Where does he live? IQ Street in Smarty Pants Town. Anyway, sorry, James Cleverly from Braintree got very angry in an interview this week when he was asked, why is the hotel quarantining happening a year later than it should have been? And he responded by saying, well, the government needed time to prepare. Yeah. Of course they did. I mean, it probably takes hours just to get Boris Johnson to put his shoes and jacket on before going out. So a year, plus those few months where the Prime Minister couldn't be bothered to attend any Cobra meetings, that isn't enough to book a few hotels to prevent variants of a virus, when the government also had to learn what a virus is, what a variant is. They had to spend hours writing policies for tier systems or slogans that sounded like they were a bonus round on a game show. They had to get rid of homelessness and then bring it back, but worse. They had to make everyone go to restaurants, and somehow had to teach Boris Johnson that people stay in hotels for more than the 30 minutes he usually needs them just to disappoint a naive intern. This is why live is terrible. No contracts have been handed to hotel chains to take part in the scheme yet, so judging by the past year, it'll be handed to whoever donates to the Conservative Party first and somehow end up with travellers landing at East Midlands Airport before being picked up in an army truck and thrown into a makeshift shack in a car park behind Drayton Manor theme park. When asked if he knew where the next mutant strain of the virus was coming from, Cleverly answered that he didn't know, which is unusual as you'd assume that all one-cell organisms that focus on ruining lives would communicate with each other. Cleverly insisted there's actually no point in closing borders to all countries just in case a virus happens to mutate there, as actually we in Britain are really good at finding variations once they arrive. What? By catching them? The coronavirus isn't a new update to Pokemon Go, mate, where we all wander around and cough out, I've got a rare one from Outer Mongolia, and then everyone swarms there to cash in. I mean, hey, maybe I'm being harsh, but considering the test and trace program for months couldn't even locate someone who you had the numbers for in your phone, the government repeatedly lose important documents leading to citizens getting deported, and we've got a prime minister who isn't even sure where his kids are, I feel like chances are very slim that they're going to be some sort of variant tracking superforce. Saying that, these variants will be coming from abroad, so there's also a chance that the second they arrive, Home Secretary and human version of getting a splinter right under your nail, Priti Patel, will be able to sniff them out and put them in a detention centre within minutes. Which actually is probably exactly where the hotel quarantines are going to end up being at, and at least if nothing else, the Google reviews that will appear afterwards might highlight how badly we treat supposedly illegal immigrants. Well, we arrived back from a lovely 2 weeks in Mauritius, only to be forcefully bundled into a car and left in a building with no Wi-Fi, no water, no toilets, and forced to clean for £1 an hour. Still, it was quite the immersive experience and cheaper than secret cinema, so 2 stars. Okay. Maybe I'm being a bit mean. Maybe a year isn't long enough to plan for these things. I mean, health secretary and man who definitely tries to impress his kids by showing them he knows all the words to a rap but changes the swears to things like oopsie, Matt Hancock. He's only just got round to watching the 2011 film about a pandemic, Contagion, which seems to have really influenced him and sadly explains why the main Department of Health plan to defeat the virus is to just sit around and wait for Marianne Cotillard and Matt Damon to save us all. Matt Hancock says the film hasn't been his primary source of advice. I mean, of course not. Maybe now he's watched Outbreak 2 and the next big policy will be to stop primates from flying into the UK. Obviously, only from countries on the travel ban list, though. Maybe Matt Hancock should have shown some of these films to his buddy, head of Test and Trace and constipated hamster Dido Harding, who told the Science and Technology Select Committee that none of us were able to predict the virus would mutate. Speak for yourself, Dido. Even I could predict that, and my only real knowledge of things that go viral is the occasional tweet I do that goes well, and afterwards I realise there's a glaring typo and I feel haunted by it for days. Dido Harding is, of course, head of the National Institute for Health Protection and potentially soon NHS England, and she didn't know viruses mutate. What other areas of health is she unaware of? Oh, well, none of us knew that once his leg fell off, he'd keep bleeding out. I had no idea that breaking your back meant you couldn't move. I just thought you'd roll around on your bum everywhere. I guess none of us could have predicted that if the government bunged a load of cash and imported jobs to their friends, that they'd be really, really fucking shit at them. Hey, life is full of surprises. Meanwhile, the Chancellor and animated corncob Rishi Sunak has accused scientists of moving the goalposts on lockdown, which instantly proves he doesn't even understand what scientists are, or he wouldn't put them in a sports-based analogy. To be fair, it must be unsettling for him to see professionals regularly change their mind based on evidence. Boris Johnson has also said that the earliest sensible date school should return is March the 8th, so I'm guessing that means they'll return February the 22nd for a full day before being closed again till 2023. Of course, the big news that dominated the headlines this week was the death of Captain Tom Moore, a 100-year-old man that raised a lot of money for the NHS, which is probably why the Conservatives were so desperate to clap when he died, as it must be annoying to put all the effort in to dismantle an institution, and then this old dude props it back up. The Prime Minister insisted that everyone stand on their doorsteps at 6pm and clap for Captain Tom, an unlikely icon who became a powerful symbol of last year in that he was an elderly person who was able to do laps in spring, but still died of COVID 10 months later because our government are terrible. It is really odd that Boris Johnson wants to clap people that his government are either sending to their death or after they've died, as though he thinks it'll work like the Tinkerbell effect. Actually, that can't be it, because that would require him believing in something. But there really is no greater way to remember doing... There really is no greater way to remember someone doing something really remarkable than by weaponizing their death to distract you from them having done something consistently shit. Boris Johnson said we should channel Captain Tom's spirit, which makes it sound like we needed a Ouija board, but it probably actually means that he's about to announce the NHS's next policy will be that it's now funded by 100-year-olds having to do a runaround. In other news, Cabinet Office Secretary and walking teratoma Michael Gove has written to the EU to ask for an extended Brexit grace period on checks between Northern Ireland and Britain, because as you know, you're not allowed to eat till after grace. Gove's insisted this is not to do with teething problems, you understand, as of course that would mean the Brexit plan the government have has teeth. Instead, Gove said there were serious problems with the Northern Ireland protocol that needed addressing, so may I suggest he sends them in a stamped addressed envelope so that he and the government... I'm going to have some water, there you go. Live podcasting's hard. Gove said there were serious problems with the Northern Ireland protocol that needed addressing, so may I suggest he sends them in a stamped self-addressed envelope so he and the government can finally read what it was they actually signed off on in a rush last year. We're nearly at the end. Don't worry, people. I'll take a breath in a second. The Labour Party have decided their way to win back disillusioned voters is with use of the Union flag, veterans and dressing smartly, which sounds like a challenge on a UKIP version of Taskmaster. Who knew that the key to electability in 2021 would be emulating Ginger Spice on a tour of Eastbourne? But a leaked report shows plans to change the party's body language, which at the moment seems to be largely lying on a floor trying to eat themselves like a really boring Ouroboros. It is strange to think, well, voters like voting Conservatives, so the best way for us to win votes is to be exactly like the Conservatives so that people might accidentally tick a box for us instead at the elections. Perhaps they are right, though, and Labour leader and canopy cookerhood extractor fan Keir Starmer regularly appears to have a pole shoved up him and ideas that are flagging at best, so now all he needs to do is wear a tuxedo and treat animals, and I'm sure there'll be points ahead. As part of this new image that will appeal to absolutely no one, with Tory voters still choosing Tories and everyone else thinking Labour are just awful, Labour made a statement that the royal family have been a beacon of hope for millions during the pandemic. And I guess that is true, as if they've managed to stop Prince Andrew getting inappropriately close to people this whole time, then it shows how easy social distancing should be for the rest of us. And finally, the Bank of England say the British economy will rebound strongly due to the vaccine, which I think, based on my experience, that means it'll fuck around carelessly to try and ignore all the symptoms of the loss that it's been through. Ah, there we go. Hello. Oh, hang on. Look, I've done the, hang on. We'll get this properly. It's exciting, isn't it? That was a bit exhausting. Normally I take a lot more breaks in that, but hey, there we go. That's nice. How exciting is this? It's nice to be able to see some of you, nice to see some faces. I know some faces. I don't know any of your faces. I can't see through the normal audio podcast. That would be really weird, probably some sort of data breach. But welcome to those of you that have joined to the next hour of your lives and mine too, because I will literally do anything to avoid more parenting right now. This is exciting. This is the live podcast, but at Leicester Comedy Festival. It's not really at it, obviously, just sort of virtually at it, you know, in the same way the government like virtually doing things about COVID, other than sort of insisting on just a willful ignorance to understand how germs work. And I hope that Rona will just get bored and think, damn, this is too easy, I give up. But look, I would say that it's very nice to be here, but I'm not there. I'm at home. I'm really bored of it. This isn't normally my backdrop. I don't normally sit in a darkened room. I've put that up so you can't see my pants, as in sort of clean pants that are sitting on my bed, as opposed to the ones that have. Anyway, well, I've got this T-shirt on though. Look. I don't know if you can see that. It's actually quite grotesque, and I suddenly realized I wore it downstairs, and my daughter said, what is that man doing? And I realized that I really shouldn't have worn that in front of her. Anyway, this is very nice. I'm very pleased that you are here, whether you're regular podcast listeners who've joined to see how stressful that intro bit is when I can't pause it and edit bits. Obviously, you can now see my face, which has probably ruined everything for you. Sorry about that. And you're very lucky that, unlike my usual recordings, I am wearing clothes, or at least some clothes. Okay, one item of clothing. And if you're someone that's never heard the podcast before, welcome as well. Thank you for joining us. Isn't it fascinating the shit that you'll burn through just to get rid of another afternoon in lockdown? Welcome to you. Well done for completing Netflix already and having to resort to this. But for those of you who don't know the show, what this show normally is it's comedy about past week's politics. Then there's sort of chats with people who know things about current issues. They're going to come in a second. And then there's more gags. And basically that means you can sort of embed the despair and crying about our current state of horror with some laughter. That's how it works. Laugh so that you don't always cry. And it's basically going to be just like that, but on a very strict time limit. We've got to be finished by 5:30 and out of here. So basically that is all the gags you get in that stuff at the top. And if you do listen to podcasts, some of those gags are probably going to repeat themselves next week. And you're going to go, well, that's very lazy of you, Tiernan, isn't it? It's not. There's only so much news in the world. If you're really bothered about like having to hear the same gags again, then you need to put in some effort causing some really serious sort of mayhem on Sunday, or like curing COVID just so I have to do a ton of rewrites. So no pressure, but this is on you. It's on you. I did try and think about some other things I could do to kind of emulate the podcast live for you. It's lovely to be able to try to sort of flick through some of your faces. Some of you have got lovely. Oh, you look very cozy. Some of you sitting in the dark. That's worrying. Very impressive libraries. Good. We were just discussing libraries before we filmed, and I couldn't put any books behind me because you'd just be disappointed in me. And they're mostly kids' books and sort of handprints from my daughter. Our living room is currently covered in glitter. We had a moment before this where they said, do we need to do anything to reduce background noise? Are you in a noisy area? And as they did that, my daughter played the recorder to some tune she'd made up in her head. So anyway, fingers crossed, we'll be safe from that. But I thought about other things that you could do to kind of emulate the podcast live. I thought that maybe I could just do this as audio, that you didn't look at my face, and then you could flick through your phone and look at endless tabs. Occasionally I have to skip back. I'd have to repeat something I did 15 seconds before because you'd missed it. Or maybe I could try and do bits in 3x speed and every now they just interrupt with like an advert for a mattress or something like that. I don't know how it works for you. So anyway, those are your jokes, guests, awful jingles. Oh yeah, hang on, I thought I'd do this right. So this is going to be very confusing for people that don't listen to the podcast, but every week there are some pretty awful jingles on the show, and I thought I'd dig some up and play them. I mean, there's some good ones as well, right? So I mean, for the look, this is definitely Brexit Fallout. I mean, that's a favourite, right? Brexit Fallout. But then, you see, then over the years, I found an archive of my files, and I'm going to play a few of these. But I just want to apologise in advance, and I'm going to watch the numbers just drop off from the audience levels.
Affordable housing is not affordable because it is is 80% of market rate. It is more affordable than unaffordable housing, but other than that, hey, it's not great.
Yeah, so I mean, it's informative, though, isn't it? It's informative, so still relevant as well, so nice to know. But there'll be a few of those moments too. And at the very end, hopefully there'll be time, you can ask lots, you can unmute and you can ask questions, probably questions like, why did I pay for this and what is the point? And then at the end, I'll do some sort of trademark podcast descriptions of all the Leicestershire MPs, which I've written. One of them's Andrew Bridgeton, and I'm going to have to put a picture of his face up, and that's going to be awful for all of you. Anyway, what more could you want? Hopefully that will be all right. And I should also say thank you for not only paying for a ticket for this show, but you're also, I'm going to donate all that money to the food bank that is run by one of the guests that we're going to be speaking to in just a minute. So you're being charitable. Basically, what that's doing is it's guilt tripping you into staying and watching the full show. You're going to be like, maybe we could get out of this. Maybe there's a way to escape. No, it's charity now. You're stuck. You can't get out. So what was I going to do? I've put the intro jingle and I've lost it. There we go. Let's go for it. It's just a short one. So this show is at the Leicester Comedy Festival, sort of course. We've been through this. Just pretend, okay? Come on, guys, get on board. And I thought, what better with it being in Leicester than having two guests who have got an idea how things are here, there, you know, here, there, virtually there. Anyway, I'm still at home. I haven't gone anywhere. Despite having been to Leicester many, many times, my main areas of knowledge about the city are still just getting stuck in the one-way system for hours and hours and hours, repeatedly seeing the turn off that I need to go down as it disappears behind me. It happens every time. I've been there every time it happens. Also, that historically it was named Leicester mainly to confuse visiting Americans when they looked at the sign. That a member of the royal family was found in a car park and it wasn't Andrew up to his usual behaviour. Also that Leicester sits on the River Soar, which doesn't sound very comfortable, so maybe it should change position. Also, though, that despite being known as an environmentally and socially progressive city, it is also in the top 20 most deprived areas in England, with more than one in four children in Leicester living in poverty. And there have been very big concerns about working conditions in garment factories that may have led to the surge in COVID cases last summer. And while those are also issues, problems nationally, this show isn't at the National Comedy Festival, is it? Is it? I'm not doing it there. I'm doing it at Leicester Comedy Festival. And Leicester has its own things going on and its own needs that no one would know about better than the people that live there. So, for this show, I asked two Leicesterians, or Chiswicks, Foxes. That sounds a bit like I'm flirting. To join me today and tell me about how the city is coping in these stupid, endless times. If the Leicester local plan seems like a smart way forward, and all sorts of things like that. So please, will you give a huge virtual welcome to social housing and environmental activist / now clicktivist, as he tells me, Tim Morton, and Abby Harrison, who started a food bank from her dining room in the midst of the pandemic. Hello both to you two. We've got one of you. Oh, there's Abby up there. Yep. And there she is. Brilliant. How are you both doing?
Good. Yeah, this nervous. Is exciting.
It is very exciting, is it? I have just very quickly realised why I record this in the week and edit myself as opposed to do it live, shouting at people down. There's probably a lot of people that have turned me down already, volume wise. But listen, I'm very, very grateful that you two had the time to do this. I have to do this; it's my job. I don't really have a choice, and it's that or parenting. But you have given up your time to be here this afternoon and inform us all about Leicester, really, at the moment. And I suppose the first big question before we get into what you both do and what you have campaigned on and what you're doing now. How has the city been during the pandemic? Because you had to have a second lockdown way before the rest of the UK did back in June, which was pretty horrifying due to a massive rise in infections. And how do you feel that the city sort of coped since then? Should we start with Tim? Should we start with you?
I don't think we've ever been out of lockdown. I think we're still in lockdown 1.0. 0.1, 0.1, 0.1, perhaps. It's quiet. It's not as quiet as lockdown one, is it, Abby?
There's a lot
of traffic around.
Much busier now.
Yeah, you can hear the birds, but you can also hear the hum of traffic. And if you look at the outer ring road, the non-stop traffic at rush hour and that sort of stuff. So that's a bit odd. And you said we had a spike in June, but I think the spike was to 50 cases per 100,000. And now we you know, that would be tier zero, wouldn't it, on the national figures. So, yeah, nobody's talking about sweatshop factories as the reason why COVID is terrible in Bexley or in Westminster or in County Durham at the moment, are they? So it must be more than that.
Yes, yeah, it's yeah. I mean, there probably are some in Westminster, though. I'm sure that's what they use the underbit of the House of Commons for. Anyway, I shouldn't record that bit. But Abby, if you notice, you know, because I live in a very, very boring bit of North London where just nothing happens anyway. So I haven't really noticed. But is Leicester, you know, are you noticing a lot of places suffering? A lot of places already having to close. You know, obviously they've had to close for the pandemic. But are you noticing a lot of people that are in trouble and a lot of sort of areas shutting down more than they?
There's people been in trouble throughout the whole, you know, from my experiences, everyone's lockdown's been completely different in Leicester. There's people who they've not left their homes yet, maybe two doctor's appointment throughout the whole time since last March. And then you've got other people, they're going to work and they've always been going to work and they're every day going to work. So for them, there isn't the same level apart from they might not nip to the shop as much. They might focus on doing that differently, you know. So I think lockdowns have been completely different. And for Leicester, it was hard, but in terms of like the cases we're feeling now, it's weird because last year it was silent on the roads. There was a whole emptiness about all the streets, whereas now we're in lockdown again, or a continuation of lockdown, and it just feels quite normal. It's still busy because there's people going to work and still continuing on. You know, we still have schools open, even though it's only key workers. It's not really like, I have friends all over the world in different countries and they're in shock at what's going on in England. They're just going, how are you behaving like this? You know, my friends in Hong Kong are just, their minds is blown at the numbers they're seeing, but how we just carry on as normal.
And, it's why I keep, you know, whenever they sort of say, oh, we're only closing travel to these areas, I think, but who is coming? Why would anyone come? If I looked at the news and thought, oh, that place is absolutely, it's like a leper island. No, I'll stay at home. I'll skip that holiday. Absolutely baffling. But I wondered, you know, as it sort of exposed other issues that are in this, obviously we mentioned the sort of sweatshops that was brought up as an issue last year. But I wonder, has it brought up kind of other issues within the city having the pandemic? Are there other things that have come out that either have always been there but maybe weren't so prevalent, or that you've noticed for the first time?
I suppose, I mean, the Leicester is the most diverse place on earth, it feels like sometimes, and it's lovely for that. And there's an assumption sometimes that everybody's living the same life in Leicester, and it's clearly they're not. You know, if you're living in overcrowded accommodation, if you've got three generations of your family, if your husband's a taxi driver and you're the care worker, then inevitably COVID is coming through your front door. And that was the issue at the beginning, and it's probably still the issue now, in terms of the impact on people from Black and ethnic minority communities. But Leicester is low pay, you know, there's a lot of gig work. There's a lot of the people who've done well out of the pandemic are the Deliveroo guys, I think. They're just, you know, cycling all over town. They're all on electric bikes these days, and they're coming through. But and I've noticed, I live in a place called Western Park. We've got a big park. It's called Western Park. And when we first moved here 30 years ago, we were about the only people who had dogs who walked in the park, and very few people used the park. It was just not what you did. Now it's rammed, and it's trodden to a quagmire because we've had so much rain. So my street runs to the park, and I just see people walking backwards and forwards along here, going for their state-sanctioned exercise each time. It is strange.
Do you think that's made, Abby, I wonder if you can sort of elaborate on this, has that made people really realise about, you know, how public space is in Leicester? Because, I mean, I'm not over there with you. I was going to say, you know, from where I am, everyone's suddenly going, oh, yeah, they closed all the places that we really needed years ago. And I wonder, are you feeling a lot of that in Leicester too?
Yeah, I mean, we've got a lot of nice parks, but they are rammed. I mean, from my experience, a lot of the green spaces are busy all the time. We don't have enough. You mentioned the local plan earlier. And I think there's a lot of places up for grab at the moment for development because there's a housing need. And then we've got this balance of actually, it's great having lots of people and good quality housing, but if you haven't got the green spaces, people are going a bit, you know, we've got mental health crisis. And if you've also got poverty, it all comes into a melting pot, which leads to issues, you know. And we do have, I think, with this pandemic, a real realization of how much inequality there is. So unless there is no different to the UK or globally, there is an increase in inequality. And those at the bottom of the ladder are really the ones who are always suffering. They're always the ones who are going to have the health crisis. They're always going to have the financial crisis. They're also going to have the food poverty. It's the same group, and that group is getting larger and larger, you know. So the inequality here, I think the pandemic has increased the inequality in some respects, but also took that plaster off where, you know, we have a lot of people who are filling in the gaps. There's a lot of people who volunteer, there's lots of charities, and they're actually doing the job of what the government should be doing. You know, local authority, our council is underfunded, which means then it's other people who are probably in that poverty group anyway, who are helping out each other. So yeah, it's a hard one. I think there's no easy solution to this, but we do need those green spaces. We do need to protect, you know, how our environment is, because that's really key to how people can grow and get out of poverty in some respects.
Is one of the things I wanted to ask you about was, you know, one of the bits of information about sort of Leicester that I could find was that last year, I think it was, oh, actually 2019. I forget what year it is. I forget what the day it is, yeah. What hour it is, this timelessness of lockdown. It's 2019. Leicester was ranked as the third most progressive city by mortgage experts. So we can take a little pinch of salt, I think. But as it was third most progressive in terms of tackling social and environmental issues. And I wondered if that seemed right to you, or if the reality is a little bit different. And I should just say that as a visitor to Leicester, one thing I do always notice, I mean, I'll talk to you about, Tim, really, is that very good with cycling, very good with cycle lanes. And I'm always quite amazed by that. I've hosted the kids' Leicester Ride certificates every year and always go, oh, wow, there's absolutely hundreds of these. This is absolutely brilliant. So does that seem right, Tim? Do you think, is Leicester good at tackling social and environmental issues?
I think, well, I'm wearing my cycling T-shirt, and I'm one of the, what it says is that I'm too fast for the pedestrians and too slow for the cars. So what the city did was quite amazingly announce in May, we're going to put in 11 miles of cycle track or walking area in the next 10 weeks. And they did. Yeah. And they, you know, wow. Not everybody uses them, but there's coned off areas. I can cycle into town quite happily. I was doing it before, but you're taking your chances with the buses and the taxis and the vehicles. And now I'm in a protected cycle lane. Admittedly, it's not everywhere, but there has been a growth in cycling. And people, you know, the kids are all on scooters and mini bikes and all of that sort of stuff. And it's the only thing that's going to save the bloody planet, actually. For me, growing up, I knew about climate change. You know, I'm a child of the 50s, and you know, in the 70s, I was learning about climate change. I used to tweet angrily that I was worried about the climate my grandchildren's grandchildren would inherit. I'm actually scared of the climate I'm going to live through. And so I think the 15-minute city, which is what they're talking about, the moving, walking and cycling, brilliant. The thing that got me back on my bike was teaching my grandchildren to ride and not being able to keep up with them when I was on foot. And the other thing was that something like 40 to 50% of all the car journeys in this city, and actually in the UK, are under 2 miles or yeah. 5 miles. You know, 2 miles there, 2 miles back.
It's a habit.
Move these big lumps of metal from outside their house to outside their office or their factory and leave it there all day, and then they bring it back. You could just do it on a bike. Much better. Sorry, got a bit carried away.
No, I agree with you though. I mean, I'm really lucky. I think the council, because of the pandemic, a pro was they were able to instigate some of these things like the cycle lanes, which they'd had planned for ages. But, you know, to be able to do it in a really busy traffic jammed area is kind of quite hard, especially when you've got a lot of opposition. But due to the pandemic, they managed to do a lot. And, you know, I taught my daughter to ride a bike with my other half, and, you know, she was 4 years old, and she's loving the cycle lanes. It's brilliant. And having that freedom to do that and that safety has been fantastic. So there are positives and negatives, and we are progressive as a city, you know, but there is an issue with inequality, and that is just global and national.
Which, Abby, I want to ask about. So I should just say that for those of you who aren't looking at the chat, Tim, you're getting a lot of fan recognition for your top there. And Tim's mentioned that it's red Molotov T-shirts if you want to get one. So top work.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Abby, I wanted to ask you, I mean, you did, which I think is a remarkable thing. You started a food bank from your dining room, as you told me, in the midst of the pandemic, which is, I mean, that's not something that everyone just does. I think potentially they should, but it's not something everyone necessarily has the willpower or the confidence to do. So how did you start that? How did you go about setting it up? And
it wasn't intentional.
Right. Okay.
It was never intentional. It's not like I went, oh, I think I'm going to start a food bank. It was not like that at all. It was really, I just happened to be saying yes to me, a bit like coming on this show. I just went yes. And then later felt, oh, what have I done? What have I done?
Fair. Yeah.
So what happened was I was on a contract and I'd just finished on Friday the 13th. And I remember being in the interview and I was meant to be going traveling last year with my daughter. And I just remember being in the interview for the HR and her saying to me, do you want to leave? And I was going, yeah, but I know I'm not going anywhere. I know what's happening and there's no way, you know, my mum's in Singapore. I'm really conscious about what's happening. I've got a lot of family in the east where I'm kind of going, there's no way we're going anywhere, we're going to be in lockdown. And I was telling people about this, although people were still laughing at me that wasn't going to happen. And then the next week I'd left work, and obviously it was the week where Boris went from not locking down to, oh, we're locking down, schools are closing, everything like that. So for me it was quite lucky to be able to look after my daughter, and I just answered a Facebook group for a mutual aid group that said, oh, we need some people to help coordinate these efforts when we go into lockdown to help people. And I just went, oh, yes, I'll do that. That's fine. So initially it was all about mutual aid. It was about let's find people, these people who are falling through the cracks. They're like people who are going to be shielding, people who are vulnerable, people with disabilities. And we just did it on a neighbour by neighbour basis. We got a load of leaflets printed. My number was on, you know, 5,000 leaflets that went around neighbourhoods. And then we just basically were finding people on streets who were capable to look after other people on the streets who might not be able to get out. Obviously, there was loads of stockpiling of food. So there was loads of issues with buying food, the internet. So everything was crashing together. And most of my job initially was getting volunteers, linking them up with people with need and saying, okay, they need some shopping doing. Can you do the shopping? Because there's no slots, they can't get any slots, they can't leave the house, get them there. You know, there was crazy things where people being trained to wash money. You know, it was a very bizarre time in March and April last year. So I wasn't, at that point, there was no food bank situation in my mind. I was just going, oh, I'm helping people out. join them together, and it was busy. You'd have like BBC Radio Leicester calling me, giving me loads of people going, I've got this guy here, can you help, can you find someone? It was just all about hooking people up together and then playing with my child a lot in between, and doing this in the evening when she went to bed. And then we sort of became an organisation really quickly across the whole of Leicester. You know, we had people per every ward. We knew all the streets. We knew who'd been leafleted. And that happened in about 2 weeks. It was like real grassroots, yeah, agile, predominantly women just on it, getting shit done. You know, you're kind of just going, right, how do we make this work? And then I started having a lot more people who needed shopping, but they had no money. And that's where that sort of started ticking on. There was a few people who were like, they relied on food banks. And, you know, that's when I found out the two food banks, which are in the west of Leicester, which I didn't know about before. You know, I didn't know how many food banks were in Leicester before. Both of them had closed down because the people running them were volunteers who needed to shield, who were vulnerable. So they're the people, that, you know, in the... So, you know, they're shut down instantly. And then there's all these people who were already relying on them who just couldn't have any food. So another food bank got in touch with me from the other side of Leicester, and they were like, we are inundated with requests from your side of Leicester, can you help? And I went, oh yeah, like an idiot. And I was like, okay, just send me the lists. And then this list, this spreadsheet just kept growing, and I was like, oh, I need to find food. Luckily I worked with some good organizations like Perfectly Edible and some churches and various people who were like, we can get some food for you to make these packages up. And because of the stockpiling, there was a phase when supermarkets returned to normal. They had that full shelf syndrome going on, so they had to get everything there. But nobody was buying anything because they'd already bought everything. So then I was like having supermarkets going, we've got a ton of potatoes. We've got this one supermarket. You've got three carloads. Do you want to collect it? And it all started coming to my dining room. I'm making packages up. I'm going, volunteers, get to me 9 a.m. Right, I've got this list for you. You know, and it went on like that for about a month. Right. And I was starting to go a bit insane. Yeah, I'm thinking, yeah, is this going to carry on like this? But it did abate, which was nice because I was like, this is not sustainable. And then the two food banks started opening up, the ones they had other people who came in. So that really took the pressure off me. And then I met some other coordinators, Eve, who I work with at the food bank. She was a coordinator for another ward. And my ward that I was looking after, Westcoats, and her ward that she was looking after, Foss, they didn't have a food bank. But from our experience, there was a clear need that there was people in need there. Mm. So we sort of talked about, oh, should we set something up and carry on and see how it goes, you know? And then we've been doing that since last June. And we're still doing it now.
It's such an admirable thing to do. And it's so much hard work that I think a lot of people get a bit terrified of the idea of doing it. And but, you know, it sounds like you've got...
It's not me alone, obviously, now, initially. But, yeah, you know, there's like 10 of us in the planning. There's at least another 20 volunteers. There's lots of people who make this happen, but they're all unpaid. You know, they're all volunteers. They're all people who are, I would not say are rich people. And that's what I think is the thing that I've noticed most, is how much of it is people who are giving their time, who are not on that top end of the spectrum of equality. So it's interesting. But also, you know, for me, it was a real eye-opener about food waste. You know, everyone could go to a food bank because, you know, we, this country, it's 2 million tons of food is wasted every year. So a lot of our food we get for free sometimes, because otherwise, you know, Tesco's, Aldi, they'll have to pay to get it got rid of. So for me, I'm kind of like, give the money. We can buy for a pound lots of food very cheaply, because these companies, they need to feed people rather than chuck it in the bin, because it's not worth it for them. It's a broken system. All of it's broken.
Absolutely. And I mean, just quickly, because I'll come to you in a second, Tim, just quickly, there was obviously, it sounds like there was a real point where it changed from just being the people that you said were shielding and couldn't go out to suddenly being, hang on, there's a whole lot of people that can't survive this pandemic.
Yeah. I'd say at the moment we're 200 households, and I say households, they are families, but they are all different types. You will have an OAP, you'll have someone with disability, you will have two asylum seekers, you will have a family with five kids, you will have a single parent. It's every type of person. There's people who've been made redundant from the pandemic, you know, there's people who were in the gig economy, and then they've suddenly gone, right, well, I was on 0-hour contract, and now they've just said, you've got 0 hours. and they've had to go for universal credit, and they've realized they've still got the same outgoings of when they work, but they just can't afford to live on that money.
Absolutely.
It's really hard. Really hard. Tim, I wanted to ask, I know you sort of mentioned in direct message to me that you're more of a clicktivist now, but you did work on a social housing advocacy campaign. And obviously that, you know, that sort of area of politics is you know, something that you're quite embedded in. I wondered if you noticed that. I mean, I sort of know what the answer, I guess, in a way will be, but the COVID pandemic and the struggles that people have had with paying rent and increased homelessness, how much have you felt this pandemic's exacerbated the need for social housing? And what are the kind of, you know, have you got localised solutions in Leicester to increasing it?
Well, I mean, I want to take my hat off to Abby for what she's just done. I work with community groups, but mainly through Zoom, and lots of them have done very similar things. And I think the way it started with Abby in terms of let's put some postcards around, I did the same thing around my street. Two people shielding in my street, didn't realise they were. My street's only 15 houses. And I think the councils came in behind and the other agencies came in behind the groups on the ground, partly because they were worried about GDPR and safeguarding and all the rest of it that they have to do because they're legal bodies. In terms of social housing, the point about social housing for me is that it used to be 40% of the stock, yeah? 40% of British households up to 1979 lived in social housing. And that's gone down radically. In 1979, think about 10% of the population lived in private renting. Those figures are completely turned around, yeah? We talk about property-owning democracy, but the way the finances worked through the 2000s was it was cheaper to buy to let than it was to be a first-time buyer in terms of mortgages. And that's what, and so first-time buyers were squeezed out. So lots and lots of people, my children's generation, are all renting. They're not owning. But they're paying much higher rent than social rent. I loved your jingle, by the way. It's actually truly the affordable rent one.
That's why I chose that one. I thought you'd like
another one of Grant Shapps' wheezes. And the Tories were very good at weasel words. You know, we will always support the most vulnerable in society. And you think, oh, that's good. And then you discover that, yeah, you're vulnerable, but you're not the most vulnerable because you've got two legs. That chap over there has only got one leg, but even he's not the most vulnerable because that woman over there hasn't got any legs at all. And by the way, she can see. So unless she was blind, she wouldn't be the most vulnerable. So it's a really handy sliding scale. So social housing happens to be the best maintained, the cheapest to rent, and the most secure form of accommodation because you had lifetime tenancies. They tried to get rid of those. They're coming back, by the way, because it's too complicated to run those short-term tenancies in social housing. Instead, we've got insecure private renting where the vast majority of families now live. Yeah? Families used to live in council housing and housing association housing, but actually the majority, there are more people living as families in private renting. And as an example of what that does, and this predates the pandemic, but my daughter's boss had a problem with her bank account. It got frozen one day. And my daughter said, Dad, you know something about housing. Can you advise my boss? So I rang this woman thinking I won't know what to say. And she was living in private renting. She'd been in the same house for 3 years. She'd just had the tenancy renewed. The landlord had praised her because she'd done all this painting and decorating and it was all lovely. And then her bank account unaccountably got frozen like they do. And she phoned the lettings agent and said, I'm sorry, I can't pay the rent this week because the bank's frozen my account, but they've said they'll sort it out next week. Well, you'll be evicted then. What? And I'm thinking, well, they can't. It'll take weeks and all the rest of it. But for that woman, she was in tears on the phone to me, who she's never met, saying, I've got three kids. Where are they going to go to school? What am I going to do? I'm going to have to pack the whole house up. And it's because it's insecure. Yeah. Yes, the landlord would have to go to court. So all the people living in private renting at the moment who are not paying their rent because they've been made redundant and it turns out universal credit doesn't quite cover all that you want it to do, the bailiffs have been stayed. They've not been allowed out. They haven't been able to go to court because court's dangerous for COVID, isn't it? So, but there is a wave of people building up who are in a lot of arrears, and they will expect to be housed by the council. Well, newsflash, Leicester's got council housing, but not every local authority has council housing anymore. And there isn't enough. And although our campaign, which was successful in the sense that most people now accept that the sensible thing to do is to build council housing and housing association housing at social rent, because the housing benefit bill goes down, the only people we've yet to convince are the Treasury and the current cabinet. Everybody else is on side. The Greens, the Lib Dems, the Labour Party, the National Federation of Housing, everybody thinks social housing at social rent is the right thing to do, except the people who control the purse strings at the moment. And there will be real issues when and if they suddenly say, you've got to come out.
And in fact, just before I ask you this question, if any of you watching would like to ask Abby or Tim a question, we've got a very short amount of time to do that. But if you want to put that in the chat right now, I can ask them in a second. And also hello to Eve as well for your lovely chat message there, which I won't read out just because we're running out of time. What I was going to say, Tim, is are there like localized solutions? Are there things that you can do within a small, you know, a city, a smaller community where you can kind of work on increasing social housing? Are there other ways in which a grassroots organisation could help?
There are, and they put some more money into the community-led housing fund, but it is peanuts. I mean, that's where I came into housing many years ago, and I'm not going back there now. But housing co-ops, self-build, that sort of thing. But in terms of the serious numbers, the government have not put anywhere near enough money into social rent. And housing associations will say, we've built some houses, you know, more affordable housing. We've built more affordable housing. And you go, is it more affordable or have you built more of it? You know, because that's another slip of the tongue. And they're doing for sale, for rent, for market rent, affordable rent, and then maybe two little social rent properties. And then the right to buy kicks in on the council housing and more gets sold and get built. So there's a real squeeze. Yes, you can get organised. You can do the sorts of things that Abby's done. We've got a nice scheme up in Saffron Lane, Saffron Acres, where they built passive house housing and so on and so forth. But I would argue that the numbers we need to be building, our campaign was saying 100,000 a year out of 250,000 new homes. And so, you know, only 40%. We started that campaign in 2014. We'd have built 500,000 by now if they'd listened then. You know what I mean? You know, we would have made a real dent.
It's all squid. It's like the developers, you know, HMOs, all of that, poor quality, the most smallest room sizes for people to live in, and they're not maintained. They don't care about the impact. And then for a council looking after these two-bedroom terrace houses turned into seven-bedroom bedsits, they just pay the same council tax, and it's still such an impact on local authorities. You know, there definitely needs to be a complete changeover of how the housing situation is worked, because it's only feeding into those who already have.
Yeah. And yeah, I'd add that the benefits freeze for 4 years, benefits have not risen. Mm. And local housing allowance, which is the housing benefit for the private rented sector, was frozen at 2014 rates. You know, if you're working and under 35 and you lose your job at the moment and you go and ask for some money to help pay the rent, you're entitled to a room. The room rate, if you're a single person, that's all you're allowed. Room rate. Not a house, not a flat, which you might have been quite happily making the rent on because you were employed.
Yeah, it's really appalling. I was going to say, and local, you know, the amount of local councils just having their funding cut all the time, so they've got absolutely even less ability to do this. I want to ask you both an awful lot more. We haven't had any questions, but what I'd like to just finish up on, thank you again for joining me this afternoon. Hopefully I'll chat to you on the podcast for a bit longer next time on an audio one, which would be exciting. I just wondered if you could recommend, obviously, apart from your Woodgate community food is feedback that you work with, Abby. I just wonder if both of you could recommend any other sort of local campaigns that are really useful for people to check out whether because they're local and they can help out with them, or for inspiration for other things they could be doing in their area. Abby, have you got anywhere that you particularly
I guess getting involved in the community in any way possible, knowing your neighbours, knowing what the needs are, is, I think, makes a big difference. I think you mentioned the local plan and I talked about it a bit. Understanding what's on the cards for your community, because so much goes on, we've got busy lives, and then suddenly things happen and you go, oh, I didn't realize that happened. I think people have to get engaged and have to get active to make sure their voices are heard, and that's really important.
Yeah, I'd say, I mean, for me, I work with two communities in Leicester at the moment. I work in St Matthews, which has had a successful food bank. One of the only food banks that do click and collect, I would have you know. They've really inspired group there. And I'm also working, I'm the chair at the Braunston Community Association now, where there's a food bank up there, just up the road, and they do amazing stuff. And they have built a grassroots organisation from a strong point. And I would say the great thing about Twitter is that you can talk to anybody. They can block you and they can mute you and they can ignore you and misquote you. But I talk to all kinds of people on Twitter and make my case there. And I listen to what, I also have a look at what they're talking about outside of what they're supposed to be talking about. And then you say, oh, I'm interested in flowers too. Or did you, I see that you like kestrels. And then you go in there and say, by the way, are you going to do something about social housing?
Love kestrels.
Yeah, such a good kestrel tip there for everyone listening. Get in via the kestrel, love. That's fantastic. Well, thank you again. Thank you so much for taking the time out this afternoon to do this. It's slightly more daunting than asking you to do the podcast normally at an audio level. So thank you for joining us. Just for the everyone watching, Abby, you're on Twitter at Abby Loves You Most. And Woodgate Community Food is at Food Woodgate. I think all the links will be in the side. And Tim is Tim Morton 2.
Very annoyed about Tim Morton 1.
There you are. Well, we'll have to take him out. We'll discuss it. We'll sort something out. Thank you again. Right, lovely audience. We have got a few more minutes and I think we've just got time. Oh, do you know what? Hang on. There we go. I feel we've got to use it, haven't we? And in fact, I think I found a jingle that you might actually like that I haven't used for some time. This is mainly for podcasters. If you haven't listened to a podcast before, this is a sort of running theme that I don't get to use so much anymore because this MP sadly isn't as vocal, or perhaps gladly isn't as vocal. But here we go.
Liam Fox is total disgrace. Liam Fox, what a waste of space. Liam Fox, just look at his face, like a rubbish contestant on the chase. Claiming expenses, taking his friend all over the place. Liam Fox, what a total disgrace. Liam Fox, what a total disgrace. Like a bad document you can't erase. Like when someone only types in lowercase. Liam Fox, what a total disgrace. Liam Fox, what a total disgrace.
Yeah, there you go. A little bit of that for you there. Right, so I'm going to, let's see if I can share my screen with you. And I'm afraid I'm going to put some MPs' faces up on your screen. I thought it'd be nice to, let's see, how do we do this slide as virtual background? No, we just want that one, don't we? We just want one of the things, not desktop. There we go. Right, so I think you're going to get to see... that. There we go. That's the Partly Political. Oh, I was looking up news about Leicester and for some reason they use this picture for this news story in the Leicester Mercury and I was just baffled by it. I thought you might like to see. The picture editor and the words editor need to have a little conversation. So as per podcast, I do descriptions of often over the top descriptions of MPs. I thought I'd do all the Leicester ones and all the Leicestershire ones. So we'll start with the Leicester ones who are all Labour. We've got first off the Shadow Health Secretary, John Ashworth. He looks like an employee of the Weyland-Yutani Corporation. He looks like a rejected Beano character. If a mouse did its hair for the school disco, it's like someone gave a bag of chips a Nazi haircut. That's John Ashworth there for you. Claudia Webb, the worst character in the Spider-Verse. Ha ha, they put a wig on a baby. There you go, that's Claudia Webb there. Liz Kendall is the woman on your street who lets off fireworks for the NHS on a Thursday while having private healthcare. She's the most well-known for posing with large military vehicles, so it makes sense to have her on the main opposition team as Labour morally tank. She always speaks like a small child who's been asked to read something they don't understand at a school assembly. And she only joined Labour because she thought the name referred to what she could make common people do for free if she got in power. There you go. That's the main Leicester MPs. This is fun. This is the Leicester Mayor Peter Soulsby. I've got two very different pictures of him, so we'll do one each. Anton de Korn, if he suffered from war flashbacks and an iron deficiency. And then we've got a harassed Spike Milligan and how everyone felt after we realised 2021 would be just like 2020. There you go. Now, I apologise for putting his face on your screen. This we're going to go to Leicestershire MPs. Oh, Andrew Bridgeton, the man who tried to hunt down Jessica Hyde in TV's Utopia. Very niche reference, that one. Andrew Bridgeton, whose surname and face comes from his long line of ancestors that had dens under bridges and would spend time mostly upsetting goats. Andrew Bridgeton, like if Toby Juggs had office parties. Andrew Bridgeton, proof that people can suffer weathering erosion too. And then we've got Alberto Costa. Disney villain sidekick, smiley potato face stuffed into a suit, emoji for blissfully unaware of anything. We've got Edward Arger. He's for Charnwood. Always got a pane of glass pressed against his face. Edward Charger, like the underside of a manta ray with hair. And if Play-Doh was sad. There we go. Luke Evans. Look at this guy. It's weird. It's like he's definitely an android. That is one I've got. It freaks me out. His face freaks me out. I don't like the fact that he's staring at me. He's a bit like if Ash from The Evil Dead wasn't actually bothered about saving anyone and just preferred adding recruits to the Army of Darkness. I did also put Beverly Hills 902. Oh, fuck off. But I'll leave that one. Jane Hunt. And Jane Hunt is for MP for Loughborough. She always looks as though the sun is perpetually in her eyes, even at night. Look. Jane, just ask them to take the picture from a different angle. Jane, just get them to take the picture from a different angle, Jane. Just stand on the other side of the camera. Jane, just it's all right. Also, Jane Hunt is the Japanese mascot for the website Next Door. And then we've got Alicia Kearns, the MP for Rutland and Melton. She is an expert at standing like she needs the loo in every single picture of her. I've only got one picture of her here, but Google her. Every single picture, it's like, just go before they take the picture, Alicia. Anyway, she's also someone who keeps having to be told, no, Jane, you don't need to wear your historical reenactment clothes today. No one's coming round. And Neil O'Brien, who is the MP for Harborough. He's like if a knick-knack went through puberty, Neil O'Brien will kill again. There you go. So that was that. So, ladies and gentlemen, that is the first ever live stream, partly political broadcast. Thank you very much for tuning in. Thank you tons to Abby and Tim for joining me. You can find them both on Twitter, as I said, Abby at Abby Loves You Most and Woodgate Community Food is at Food Woodgate. If you'd like to help and donate, all the links are in the side. Also, Tim can be found at Tim Morton too, so follow him there. And of course, this is at Leicester Comedy Festival. Follow them, check out all the other shows too. And if you enjoyed any of this nonsense and you don't already listen to the weekly podcast, there are new episodes out every Tuesday. This week's guest is the absolutely brilliant Emily Kenway with her book The Truth About Modern Slavery, Modern Slavery is not like a Modern Family spin-off series that would be ill-advised. It's not also some sort of progressive slavery. It's a very serious problem. The book is absolutely fascinating. Progressive slavery would be weird, wouldn't it? All our slavery is organic and fair trade. It's not like that. But the book is fascinating. Do get a copy and listen to the podcast next week. She is brilliant. And you can find the podcast at partlypoliticalbroadcast.co.uk, at parpolbro on Twitter, or the Partly Political Broadcast group on Facebook that I am massively shit at updating. Or, of course, you can just shout at me via the chat or send a carrier pigeon or some sort of wax cylinder to my house. But, of course, it's always just easiest to look online. If you fancy it, even though you paid for tickets, you can donate to me as well as the food bank at ko-fi.com/parpolbro. Join the podcast Patreon at patreon.com/parpolbro. Or just leave your credit card number engraved in a tree in the only park near my flat that I ever get to go to anymore, and I'll use it to buy myself some kitchen gadgets that I don't need that make an egg into the shape of a woodland creature or something like that, or ensure your tomatoes are lukewarm. I don't know. Something useful. Thank you tons to Leicester Comedy Festival, Jericho Comedy, Next Up Comedy, Zoom, probably, I guess, and I suppose COVID in a weird way. Otherwise, you know, I'd be doing this in Leicester and I've had to drive up and down the M1, which would have been shit, but at the same time, really miss it. Really miss service station egg mayo sandwiches. That's what I miss. Anyway, I've been Tin and Diab. Don't forget to act like you've got the coronavirus, which means either sort of carry on as you are or pretend you're dead and see how many people care. Bye!
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.